Low-income housing shouldn't force people to live in squalor, yet the dwindling supply of low-income housing in the United States has been deteriorating because of aging and neglect. My next guest has marshaled billions in private money to rehab tens of thousands of affordable housing units, and now he's a finalist in this year's Service to America Medals program. Thomas Davis is director of the Office of Recapitalization at Housing and Urban Development, and he joins me now. Mr. Davis, good to have you on.
Good to be on. Thanks so much for having me here.
Tell us how this program works, because I thought that the low-income housing was subsidized by the government and therefore should be taken care of by whoever owns it.
A lot of properties, particularly in the public housing portfolio, are directly subsidized by the federal government, but the budgets have been pretty tight for decades in public housing. So there's a bit of a capital backlog that we're trying to fix.
So instead of giving them the wrecking ball, you're trying to rehab. Are these mostly the high-rises that you see around New York and Boston and that kind of place, or
certainly
what?
Certainly you've seen the high-rises. You've also, I'm sure, seen the two-story low-rise barracks-like public housing properties. And some of them are also less visually noticeable, but a lot of them have a lot of needs in terms of their basic systems haven't been updated in decades, and we're trying to create the opportunity for them to leverage private money, debt and equity money in improving the properties. And we've actually, in just the last 4 years since the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program was launched, we have helped local housing authorities generate $4 billion worth of construction work.
Now, this was originally authorized by Congress as a way of offloading the responsibility for this from the federal budget?
It's a way to build public-private partnerships to deal with this problem. The amount of work that we have done in the last 4 years, if it had been paid for by the annual congressional appropriations, would have taken 46 years to do that level of investment in the portfolio.
So they would have fallen down before you could actually get to them in some cases?
In some cases. Back in 2010, there was a study that indicated that at the time we were losing about 10,000 units of public housing every year.
Tell us how the program works.
So fundamentally, it's moving from the public housing portfolio to, you may have heard of the Section 8 properties and the Section 8 program. And so the core of the program is just a regulatory shift from public housing to Section 8. But in Section 8, there is a lot more flexibility to form these public-private partnerships to access a mortgage so that you can repair something comprehensively rather than sort of patching something that you can't afford to repair in total. You can tap into tax credit programs to bring private equity in. You can apply for funding from local sources. It really just opens up the door for a lot of creativity by the housing authorities to respond to their local needs.
That is to say that housing that was not Section 8 was moved to Section 8, which is private ownership?
It's not necessarily private ownership. In some communities, the housing authority has decided to bring in a nonprofit partner or in some cases, a for-profit partner. In some communities, the housing authority has retained ownership. So it's really not about what the ownership is. And the program also requires either government or either public or nonprofit ownership or control to maintain the public orientation, the mission orientation of the property long term.
I guess if you would maybe clarify the difference then between Section 8 housing and other forms of public housing.
Sure. In both types of housing, the tenant pays a percentage of their income as rent. So from the tenant's perspective, the two are very similar. In public housing, Congress allocates a certain amount of money for operating and capital needs to the housing authority, and the housing authority figures out how to spend it across its portfolio. And in Section 8, there is an agreed contract amount that is the rent that comes in for each unit, and the federal government pays the difference between the tenant contribution to the rent and this agreed rental stream. So it makes, in Section 8, it operates much more like a normal apartment building, in that whoever the owner is, the housing authority or a public-private partnership, has a rental stream that they can count on. And it's more predictable long-term.
We're speaking with Thomas Davis, director of the Office of Recapitalization at Housing and Urban Development. And so what is the incentive for a Section 8 operator to invest in property when, even though there is a guaranteed rental stream, there's a cap on it?
There's a cap on it. Many of them are in the affordable housing industry because they care about affordable housing issues and housing low-income families. They are also able to run it as a business, as an apartment community, just like any other business. Just their margins are much tighter.
Yeah. So how do you then attract this private capital that is the heart of the program we're talking about to this type of housing? You said you've attracted $3.9 billion in private investment in some of these older housing units. What attracts the people to invest in it?
If you're borrowing funds with a mortgage, that is one of the investments. There are also tax credits that private companies and banks can invest in these affordable housing communities and get a tax benefit over time. So the housing authority or the public-private ownership is going out to the capital markets, and in the capital markets, it's fairly normal business. The lender is not getting a different rate of return. It's how the ownership operates, and they have been able to tap into the capital markets in ways that they couldn't under the public housing structure.
How do you make sure that when the money is doing what it's supposed to do, that
sure.
the housing is upgraded in the way that HUD cares about?
Yeah, so in order to participate in the program, we review to make sure that we require a third-party study about what the needs of the property are, and they need to demonstrate as part of the approval process to participate that they can cover their capital needs of the property and their operating needs for the next 20 years at a minimum. So they need to demonstrate that either they have secured the funding up front or that they have enough money each year to deposit into a replacement reserve to cover all of the capital needs and maintenance needs of the property for the next 20 years, as determined by a third-party study. So we review those capital needs assessments, we underwrite the transaction, and we work with them, with the participating agencies, to make sure that the property is going to be sustainable long-term. And often they're doing things that reduce the operating expenses as well. For example, they are often taking a property that last got a major redo renovation in the 70s or 80s, and they are doing a lot of work on insulation and improving the energy usage of the building and bringing down operating costs because the building is upgraded and now more efficient.
Sure. Have you gotten a chance to get out maybe and see a couple of before and after situations?
Yes, it's really fun. The residents are really excited. I've been to sites where before the renovation they were having trouble getting consistent heat and hot water, and the renovation completely redid the systems. And sometimes the renovations are the invisible things, like the heat and hot water. I was in one property in southern Texas that got air conditioning installed for the first time. And then in other places, they are doing things that are much more visible, like new kitchens and bathrooms to replace, kitchen cabinets that had been installed in the 1960s. And other places have done accessibility improvements, so folks with mobility concerns were really able to use the full benefit of their apartment and that kind of thing. There are also some of them are very unseen benefits, like indoor air quality, which can really affect asthma rates for kids and things along those lines. So it's really fun to go out to the sites and hear the residents talking about how much their lives have changed as a result of this program.
Thomas Davis is director of the Office of Recapitalization at Housing and Urban Development. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
He's also a finalist in the Service to America Medals program. Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.